If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten. And that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. Hello and welcome to episode 30 of the Same Old Wombles podcast. We're brought to you by some of us who put together Yellow and Blue back in the day. We're by the fans, for the fans, now and forever. Same Old Wombles is proudly unofficial and non-affiliated. My name is Mark Lewis. I remain an optimist, a trait I'm told that can be either encouraging or annoying, depending on your frame of mind. Tonight's panel features Matthew Cooper, Niall Cooper, and to bring some levity to proceedings, Alex Folks. On tonight's show, we will have to, sadly, revisit the misery known as Wimbledon 0 Crawley 1. On Saturday. Do we need to talk about JJ? I guess, probably. We may mention Wowser, and of course, even though Adam is jet-setted off to San Francisco, we'll have some numbers. Welcome to episode 30.
All I want to do is watch football. All I want to do is watch football. We fell down, we fell broke, like we ain't got a hope. Like the times when you're down to 10. What can you do when they're coming at you? You gotta take it back to them.
Done what we should for the great work, Mark. And I think I've been trying to levitate, alleviate the mood by listening to Radiohead and the Smiths. That's made me feel a lot more jolly about the situation, to be honest with you.
I thought I'd try to play Leonard Cohen, Matt. He was equally jolly.
Hallelujah.
Is this the first time I've actually recognised the quote at the start of the broadcast?
Quite possibly. It's probably the first time Matt hasn't told me off.
Yeah.
There's nowhere I can go with it, Mark.
Well, that's why I had to start there, because, you know, there's nothing to be jolly about, unfortunately, as being a Wimbledon fan right now. Is there? Well, you tell me.
Well, yeah. I mean, the one thing to be very positive about, and I think, you know, we take this holistically, is we've got the most amazing women's team.
Yes, we have.
Who are flying, you know, flying in the league and through to the final of a cup. So, which is fantastic. So we have got an amazing women's football team, which is brilliant.
April the 2nd, get on down to Plough Lane. I believe it's the next home game.
The only other thing I can think of is, being that this is a traditional comment from me, is that the new Argentinian sandwiches are actually really, really tasty and definitely worth, if you're coming to Plough Lane for any reason at all, then that's definitely the new highlight, surpassing many of the other very good high quality food that we have here. That is about as good as it gets.
And once again,
I had one of the chorizo ones on Saturday, having gone for the traditional steak up until then. And yeah, that was up to speed as well. So yeah, full on happiness with them. I'm actually quite happy about a lot of things to do with my Saturday afternoons. The food is good. The drinks are good for those who are drinking, and I'm not drinking at the moment, but hey, you know, the beer is good. The friends are good. The ground is brilliant. It's only the football that lets it down. So, yeah, shame about that. But most of my Saturday afternoons are quite jolly at the moment.
I was genuinely asked by a work colleague today who lives in Ellesfield, who hopefully I'm going to get to bring to a game. And she said, where do the away fans drink? So I explained that they drink close to Ellesfield Station. Then she said, well, what about the food? You know, there's not really much to eat, or many places to eat down near the ground. And I explained about all the food trucks, and she was genuinely amazed. I mean, she's not really a football fan or even a sports fan, but she was genuinely impressed. And things like the Argentinian place, again, big up to Dom Tuma. I know he's had some praise on social media about this, but he deserves it because he's one of those foot soldiers that put the legwork in doing Plough Lane Bond and has carried on doing it. And as a result of that, these guys have come there, and it looks like business-wise they're doing well. So they've come back to two or three games, and despite lower attendance on Saturday, they were still there and they were still doing good business. So,
Mark, what's interesting, you talk about that. We call Wheelport as a low attendance, but it was 7,300, and we were budgeting for 6,500 a week. So in that, for what was, we all think was a low attendance, we're still 800 above what we were budgeting for. Well, that's what I remember from, you know, and that's pretty impressive. And I think a lot of that actually does come down to the fact that people are behind the South Stand and the queues are massive for all those food outlets. People enjoy the atmosphere of everything but the football.
It is true. I mean, it is phenomenal, isn't it? But we are getting our home attendances are regularly above 7,000, even when we're playing sides that have got traditionally lower away attendances. So it is crazy that we're attracting that. And just imagine what our attendances would be if we decided to win games. I mean, you know, it's a new philosophy. Hopefully, one that will translate into the team at some point.
What, winning?
Yes. Be nice.
Yeah, that's a strange one. We're going to come on to that, Mark, I take it.
Well, winning. Now, why do we want to do that? So here's the thing. Where we sit is kind of the wrong angle. But the linesman in the first half was getting a lot of encouragement from the crowd. Encouragement basically to go on a fitness campaign so that he'd actually be somewhere in line with play. Because Crawley were better than us, which is awful to say for a team in second bottom. But the first goal, the only goal, their only shot on target, was 6-7 yards offside. Doesn't matter because it was allowed. But, you know, it's galling that whilst we have to put up with the quality, in inverted commas, of League Two football and the issues that happen on both sides and how easy it is sometimes to stop teams playing, it's also galling that none of the match officials, and I genuinely cannot think of one this season, have been, it appears to me, match fit. In other words, fit enough to be able to run from even the halfway line as a linesman or from a referee's perspective, if a long ball's played out and then there's a foul or coming together between the defender and a striker, they're just so far away, they cannot give that type of decision accurately. And there have been occasions on this season where I believe we've probably, or we should have, conceded penalties, but haven't because the referee was so far away that he couldn't give it. So he just bottled it. But on Saturday, that was just ridiculous as normal. And obviously, there wasn't much pace in League Two. And there wasn't certainly very much pace on Saturday at all. But what was the most depressing bit about Saturday for me is Crawley were another very limited League Two team. And they comfortably held us at bay.
I think genuinely, you know, there is lots of problems, aren't there? We've talked about this before. We were done in the loan market, so we lost, and JJ says, two of our best players in Asal and Towler. We've got a huge long injury list as well. But I still think some of the people coming for our team, we had enough quality there to at least hold Crawley. The thing that does for me, and this is the problem, is that JJ just seems to show a lack of passion. It doesn't seem like he cares, and that doesn't come across in his post-match interviews. It doesn't look like he cares, and that is the thing. You want someone who actually cares, and you feel is going to motivate your team. I do not get that from JJ, personally.
I think I have to agree with you, Matt. I think I find it really hard because, you know, I know some of the reasons for why JJ was appointed and I can still see those. And, you know, you could go, right, well, what we're missing, we need a couple of centre-backs, we need a centre midfielder, we need a new person to be that old-fashioned number nine up front, and we need a creative player. And you can go, well, what do you mean? You mean you need PK, you need Pierce, you need Pell, you need DJ, and you need Davidson. Right, because that's actually what you looked at the team and say, what are we missing? And then you can list all the people that are out, which fill all those roles. So there is an excuse, kind of ready-made excuse out there. But Matt, you're right. I mean, I'm not seeing that passion. I'm not seeing that. When we've gone 10 games without a win, and we've got the performance on Saturday was dire and without passion, you know, there are only a couple of people you could say, like Huss, maybe Nightingale and Al up front. Those three were the only ones I thought could come off that pitch with any kind of credit. And everybody else you'd get rid of, or we shouldn't be in the team, and they're just not playing with that passion. And, you know, I'm sadly of the opinion that getting Bassi, who I think will be cheaper, in, is probably not a bad move. Because at the moment, I'm feeling that I can't see us getting a win out of anywhere at the moment.
I look at it and I think, yeah, the injuries are a very good excuse because, as you just said there, Noel, the positions we need are the ones where our good players are missing because of injury. But, you know, you can't blame everything on injuries. The season is long. You're always going to get players out either injured or needing a rest. And the question for me is whether Davison is injured because he was played too much, whether he should have been rested earlier. Yes, you need the passion, but you also need the tactical nous. There are a couple of times where we've been done by teams that made batch changes and changed their tactics, and we didn't adapt to it. And we were, you know, from winning positions, okay, this didn't happen on Saturday, but from winning positions, we've gone on to lose the game simply because the other team, the other manager was smarter. And that's not good enough. You shouldn't have to rely on a change of manager to instill a different mindset, to get the players motivated. I thought our first half was bad on Saturday. I thought our second half started off a little bit more promising, but then went downhill. And we ended up never looking like scoring. And I get frustrated, so frustrated by the fact that we only ever have one up front in the middle. You'll see four or five players sometimes, particularly on the left wing, where most of the focus seems to go. Poor old Pearson on the right wing was ignored most of the time. But our left wing play, they'll be looking to pass it further and further down the left wing. And there are always options to play it on the left wing. But the reason we're not crossing the ball is because there's only Ali in the middle daring to stick his head up saying, please pass it to me. And, you know, what do you do then? They've got four players marking Ali and there's virtually no chance he's going to get a shot on target or a header on target. So we've got to stop putting endless players on the wing ready to develop play when there's nothing to develop into. For me, the injuries are an excuse. Yeah, tiredness and motivation and shouting is an excuse. But at the end of the day, it's all about tactics. It's all about trying to beat your opponent, working out what the weaknesses of your opponent are and playing into those. Crawley are down the bottom. Yeah, they had a win and a draw recently, but before us. But they're down the bottom for a reason. They're down the bottom because they're not a very good team. And we should have been looking at video and working out how other sides beat them and try and do the same thing. And if that doesn't work, have a plan B. I didn't see either on Saturday. I just saw we're going to play the Wimbledon way, which hasn't been working all season.
And you get that sense that he's feeling sorry for himself. It's just like some, you know, oh, we've got the injuries, so it's like we'll play this tactic because I'm trying to get the best players on the pitch. And there was a prime example a couple of weeks ago, wasn't there, away where Ali was played out on the left wing. You know, because he's trying to get his best players on the pitch, and it's all about and he doesn't trust the players on the bench. That's what I'm getting. He's really not trusting the players on the bench. And there was a horrible moment on Saturday. I heard in the home end they were singing Simon Bassey's Yellow and Blue Arm.
Actually going to say, what did people think of how patient the crowd has generally been? Because obviously the crowd has generally led the chanting, not that there's a huge amount, but the chanting that does exist at home games exists from the people in the mover stand behind the goal, south stand. And to me, they've been very, very patient. But I didn't hear that particular bit, but you guys have said a little bit closer to that. It wouldn't surprise me if they'd been other stuff. I didn't hang around at the final whistle. A lot of people didn't hang around after about half an hour. So I suspect the one positive thing of Saturday may have been increased bar takings, but that's hardly in exactly the most significant thing that we want to concentrate on.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting a lot of things right as a club. Our stadium's great. The food out is great. The beer's great. It's just the football that's nothing. And that's the trouble is we as Niall says, we've done really well with attendances. But the question is, how many season tickets are we going to sell next year? How many people are actually going to bother next year? We get these outreach things. I know we're going to be talking about Women of Wimbledon later, but we're risking everything just by not being able to concentrate on the bit that really matters, which is being able to put on an entertaining football game.
And then, of course, as we discussed, because it was almost released while we were recording last week's pod, he's now got Jenkins, Aji Hershey, Ogundire, and Alfie Bendel back from the loans they were on. There's still a few other people out on loan, different places. I think with the loan situation, you actually have to wait 28 days from when the loan first starts before you can recall it. That may have accounted for why they weren't immediately back. But actually, and again, I don't want to pick on him individually, but Bendel came on and he had some reasonable time to come on. Yes, he was playing deeper than some of us want him to. But in fact, in about 5 minutes to me, he showed perhaps why he'd been sent to play in Conference South, because he was pretty raw and his touches were not necessarily all that. I do like the fact, for example, just to think about some positive things. We're using Quinton Casuals quite a lot. Morgan Williams was there and had done relatively well as a 17-year-old. And now that that Eastbourne obviously lost Bendel, because Bendel was recalled, Williams has gone straight to Eastbourne Borough. So he's gone from presumably Ryman Prem or Ryman 1 into Conference South at age 17 and came on as a sub and set something up straight away in his first game. So that's a positive thing. I don't know. Presumably at 17 years and got a pro contract yet. Presumably, fingers crossed, we can get him on one, and that's a sign for the future. And then you have got a Curry, potentially, a Biller, a Bendel, a Williams to add into the squad next year. The biggest issue, I think, which again is Jackson himself perhaps holding his own hand up, was a quote within the South London Press post-match, which is talking about needing essentially players that were battle-hardened enough to play for 35-plus games, as if to say, yes, I may have recruited certain players, Pierce being one of them, for example, Brown being another. But actually, I don't have the programme to hand, but how many, apart from Davison, who clearly was overplayed and is now just wear and tear, not all that, how many players have we actually had? Do we have a core six or seven that have played 30-plus games this year? I suspect we don't. And so the likes of Curry and Woodyard have come back in the team. On top form, they would be first choices in the team, but they come back in the team when they haven't necessarily always been fit. Likewise, Brown as well. And so their performances haven't been all that. We'd like Pell back in the team, but actually, if his injury is long-term, if DJ's injury is long-term as well, then they may not be seen to the last two or three games. I mean, Billow, I heard was going to be a month away, and that was 2 weeks ago. But he came on and he looked fit and he looked like the only bright spark we had.
I'm interested also forward-wise. I mean, Ali's been fantastic. In terms of anything, that's a revelation. It's just a shame that he hasn't been on the winning side yet. But he has been a revelation in terms of a striker, and I'm pleased that we've got him on a 2.5-year contract. That's brilliant. But we haven't got anyone else. I mean, like, you know, so Zach Robinson's still up at Dundee, and Cosgrave, isn't it? Is at King's Lynn, and I mean, he's been doing quite well, my understanding there. So surely, why don't we bring one of these guys back? You know, does JJ just simply not like them? Because we need an attacking option. So if, with Ali being away on international duty, is Davison going to be fit for this weekend? And if he, even if he is, can he last 90 minutes? And if he comes off, who goes up? I know Pierre was up at the end, wasn't he, in the last game? But who do we put on up front?
I was wondering how poor Grenada's international squad is if Pierre's managed to get a call up for it, because I'm not sure I really wanted him involved. I did also read today that apparently Gunter has gone to be part of the Welsh coaching squad.
Right, so we've agreed. That doesn't count as an international call-up, does it? Because I mean,
No, it doesn't.
But then on saying that, let's be honest about Gunter's performance. I don't need to say much more about that.
But like, sure. the one big favour he could do us is come out of international retirement. If he could come out of international retirement, that would do us a favour, because then we'd have three people on international duty, wouldn't we? We could postpone the match.
But sure, but my worry with the Gunter situation is not that he's been playing well and we're losing a key player, but it speaks to the attitude within the squad. You've got players who would rather go and be an assistant part-time coach than play for us. I think that part of the problem with Bendel, who didn't have a great game when he came on, and probably with Sam Pearson as well. I know he's not ours, he's on loan, but still he's looked pretty good in the games he's been able to play so far. But I can see their heads going down. I can see them wanting to play well, but just looking around the dressing room and thinking, well, if none of the others can be asked, why should I?
Yeah, sad but true. I actually saw a gentleman, and I appreciate this is going back to days of yore, but I saw a gentleman standing outside the main entrance as I was selling programmes pre-match on Saturday. He's been at loads of games, and his wife comes as well. He was wearing yellow trainers, and I thought, a middle-aged bloke wearing yellow trainers, you have to be an ex-footballer, and it was indeed, looking very slim with a very crafted beard, just like Alex's, and a flat cap, Peaky Blinders style, Mr. Matt Everard. And you wonder, obviously, you know, different era, different time, different situation and everything else. But yeah, that type of Matt Everard. Danny Bormann was there as well, obviously visiting as a former player for both sides. That's the kind of character, you know, a lot of people were rude and quite scathing about Darius when he came back last year. But I presume that's what Robbo was looking for, that type of father figure for a young team, a young squad. And at the moment, they're presuming that Pearson Woodyard will do that. But to me, it seems like Pearson Woodyard wouldn't be in the team if we had more credible options, either from an injury point of view or just from a performance point of view, but we don't. And therefore, they're trying to churn things out, but not necessarily actually achieving it.
It's all just very depressing. I mean, it does come back to, if we were to get rid of JJ, is there somebody who can, given the limited resources we've got, is it almost an impossible task for any new manager?
I don't think it is, because for all that, mathematically, clearly we're not safe, and you know, we have this appalling run of form at the moment, but I can't see us going down. I may be far too optimistic in that, but I cannot see that we can be relegated. So a new manager coming in, even if they drew a couple, 1-1, and lost everything else this season, would still be a league club next season. And if they got the backing to be able to build a squad that was robust and resilient and was able to keep hold of Curry and Biller, was able to get some decent loans in, even if we go in with the attitude next season that a loan is only until January, I think that they can do better. They can, but you know, we can't expect anything to turn around this season except perhaps a bit more tactical now and a bit more energy and a bit more enthusiasm and a happy coach on the sidelines, or even an unhappy coach. I just don't want to see them standing there looking, you know, nothingness of it. So I don't worry about this season in that I don't see us going down, but I do think a new coach could do something next season, and I think that's the key.
But will it have as nice hair, Alex? I mean, you've got to admit, JJ has lovely, lovely hair, and he doesn't want to get it ruffled, I'm guessing, is a big thing.
I mean,
that's what I want. I genuinely want someone who's got a bit of passion. The big thing I've got is, you get rid of JJ. I don't know how long his contract is anyhow. I mean, when does it end? Mark, you might know. And then
I don't.
If he goes, there's a payout. So that's one thing. And then if we get someone else in, it's going to be like, do we go through a quick and dirty process of getting someone in? In which case, will they say they want to be on a long term contract as well, at least a year and a half? So then there's that cost. And then there's the other thing about, you know, the one thing that is slightly frustrating is having to go for a torturous recruitment process. One would hope that there is a system behind the scenes that where things are in place already. If we have to get rid of a manager, there's already sort of like options lined up, rather than having to do that thing where we literally advertise on our website. I hope we don't go down that route again.
Mark will be covered with DTB confidentiality, whereas I'm not the DTB, but I can kind of tell you roughly how the process might work.
You can tell us what happened last year because you were on the board when
moved on. We did a robust process to get Jacko in, but with Bowen, it was fairly quick. You know, it was still looking at that. And I think if we're looking to get, and it was a PLC thing, right? So we weren't given a big call, here's a long list of candidates or anything like that from the DTB, because I'm one of the people on the DTB, was one of the people on the DTB that wasn't the PLC. So I was like, you know, you're pretty much kept in the dark about all these things when you're moving really quickly, which is probably the right way to be when you're looking at an operational board and a strategic board. And so that's kind of the situation. So Mark, you know, Mark wouldn't know or probably wouldn't be aware of all of those things. There'll be a conversation probably going on at some level about what is the process, about how long would you give Jacko, when do we start making those decisions, and how quickly do you move. That process probably will be, as you'd expect, to be in some sort of advanced situation about looking at, you know, kind of planning, that kind of, like, you know, that's what you do in these sort of situations, so you know what we need to do when these things occur. So I think people are kind of a bit, we've been hurt a little bit about what happened with Robbo. I mean, Robbo was a decision that was taken by the board at the time about when to get rid of Robbo, when to get rid of Ardley and all that. You know, there were a lot of votes about a whole load of things about, you know, what we should do and how we should get rid of things. That's happened, certainly would have happened with some of the other senior staff that have been in the club. There were votes about that went on, and there were split boards. And I know I was definitely in most of those cases in the minority, which people would probably be surprised about, you know, for a whole load of those key decisions. And that's what happens when some of those go to the board. The process is much sharper and more robust now. I know I'm sounding kind of a bit vague, but that's because, again, I don't want to kind of, like, you know, some of the stuff was private, and there's a reason for it why it was. But, you know, it is sharper now. It is more robust now. We have got a better structure in place. You know, I would imagine now that this is with Cope and Buckley is the where that buck lies now. It won't be with Danny Macklin. He probably has some input, but Danny Macklin's doing a great job off the pitch, as we just talked about. But on the pitch, Cope's only been in place, 2 months, Mark?
Yeah, mid-January. So, yeah, 2 months.
2 months, right. So it's Cope's responsibility, and Cope's walked into this injury crisis that we've just been talking about. So there'd be a whole issue about that, about what we do with that. So that's where that decision will be taken. It won't be It'll be a recommendation to the PLC board. They'll probably be able to do that offline to decide what happens with Jacko. That's how I think it will move in terms of recruitment. They're also now in a situation that the whole club is in a more nimble place than it ever was. So if we make the decision to get rid of Jacko, replacement will probably come in quite quickly.
And one would hope the other thing is that it's not about accepting applications, because I think this is what happened in the last time when we got Jacko in. We accepted applications, and it wasn't a great field, was it? Our understanding is we were not choosing from a great pool. But I'm hoping that we could be much more proactive in identifying someone that we would like, rather than waiting for applications to come in. Because if we do that's where we have this.
That's the thing, is that people think that we're going to get loads of people flooding to want to become AFC Wimbledon manager. And they weren't. You know, that we didn't have a like massive, huge selection of candidates. We were like really struggling to find anybody of any caliber at all. So that kind of idea that's kind of goes around that we're like this massive attractive beast of like everybody wants to become a manager of AFC Wimbledon. That's not the case, right? So we haven't actually, we're not going to get a massive flood of these brilliant candidates. Or in fact, are we going to attract all these other brilliant candidates from lower down? Because frankly, everybody knows who the brilliant candidates are, and they'll be picked off by other clubs before we get a sniff. And they're going to be looking at us going, right, you know, we're not that attractive. That's why the work that we do off the pitch is really important, because you want a manager to come in and go see the potential of how financially this club can grow. And that's where you have that opportunity. So, you know, we've really got to think about what we do off the pitch and realise how important that is, because without that going well, we're just simply not going to attract decent people to come and join us.
And just picking up on that one for a minute, it's apparent to me, just from reading official club stuff, let alone anything else, that obviously Danny's been in place longer than Craig, as we know, and as a result, he's already identified, you know, things that need to be done. We haven't really talked about the fact that, you know, we were advertising for a commercial director. And for a commercial director that we're advertising for, we're asking for a certain specific requirements. And one of those specific requirements, which may seem obvious and logical, but it's obviously been part of the job spec, is that we're asking for clear, appropriate experience working in the football club from a commercial point of view. And if you talk to Danny, and Danny is very approachable, as everybody knows, to anyone he knows and loads of fans, and he, you know, he's been on other podcasts over the last weekend, which is a particularly good thing to do, possibly brave thing to do in circumstances, but good for him for doing it, because I know he's got enough going on in his personal and business life. But he's done those things, and he's already identified what needs to be done. He's already brought in specific headhunters to help us out in the recruitment for both the commercial thing and also for an IT person, because this is actually addressing specific issues, just as Niles just said, specific issues that are going on in the stadium, in the club right now. And the fruits of those labours will not necessarily be seen for a period of time, but equally they need to be addressed, and we need to bring in the right people to do so. And we're making sure that happens, making sure that happens within the day-to-day profitability of the club. So that is off the field stuff. Things like the Argentina against Scotland ladies may seem like a bit of a niche thing, but that again is going to be a separate event which is going to be run in the club. It's going to bring new people into the ground, new people coming to that particular place, different people, additional people out of match day stuff. I think it's the same day as the one of the away games going on. So that's not.
So wait a minute, can I just get this right? So Scotland are playing Argentina and Australia. That's amazing. I thought they were only playing the Australian side, but you've just thrown in Argentina.
My apologies. My apologies. I know it's the Matildas. So there is Matildas are Australia, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you, sir. Okay. I'm trying to be complimentary. You're just being cheeky. Go to the top back of the class and sit there with a D hat on, Mr.
Matthew. It wouldn't happen if I didn't have to correct you every 5 minutes.
You're so kind. So that was the positive things I was talking about. But obviously, naturally enough, everybody is hell-bent on understandably talking, not talking negative things up, but, you know, feeling negative and not necessarily quite so enamored with life overall. Did we want to move on and talk about anything else, such as the launch of the new women's group?
I think it'd be very interesting to get a DTB take on the Wowser. My understanding being that they are not they're not DTB affiliated. They're an independent supporters organisation, much like if we set up the same old Wombles Independent Supporters Association, we could do it. We're not affiliated to anything. It would be up to us to run it.
Wombles Independent Sports Association. We take donations, SWISSA. If you'd like to join SWISSA, we're launching it today with no fanfare at all, completely independent of anything. We're not unofficial. We are unofficial, and we're definitely not affiliated to any other kind of organisations like TalkSport.
Niall is now rambling. To answer Matt's question, you're quite right. The reality is our football club and probably every single one of the other 90 football clubs around the country need to improve the demographic and the diverse nature of their supporter base. You know, we are a couple of miles from Tooting and we're a couple of miles the other way from Elswell and Wimbledon and so on. So there's a whole different demographic that has been spoken about at length that the club doesn't necessarily reflect on a match day. All of us are a certain age. We've been going for a certain length of time and we are, you know, white university educated men. And there are, however, looking around on a match day, fewer women of any breed, colour, age represented. But then you walk around Wimbledon or Earlsfield or Tooting or any local area, let alone, you know, Thornton Heath and all the other areas that we used to get fans from when we were over at Selhurst. And it'll be a much more diverse and a much more mixed population. 51-49 in the whole country, as far as I'm aware, without being any kind of census expert. Therefore, any initiative that is organised by whoever wants to organise it to try and help out in that regard, I think should be welcomed in general terms. How they do it is a different story. How they affiliate themselves is a different story. From the Dons Trust point of view, we obviously want to increase the number of members that we have as a Dons Trust to be able to be owners and supporters of our football club and invest in our future in all senses of that word, which means that we obviously need more. We need more teenagers involved. We need more women involved. We need all different groups involved, and we need all different groups to feel wherever they fit in the population that they are comfortable being a Wimbledon fan and comfortable coming to play a land. It's as simple as that, really.
I think the big thing that gets me is why are we not a Hurricane 2 club when 84% of our fan base voted to back Hurricane 2? That, for me, should have been our priority because, like, we had that survey out. It was really, really categorically massively in favour. And out of that, people that didn't vote in favour, like, there was very few people that voted against. So it just seems, and we're a complete outlier. I mean, like, nearly every single Football League club is a Hurricane 2 club. We should be championing it and jumping up and down and doing it. And the fans want us to. I mean, that should have been, forget all this other stuff. We should have been doing that months ago because that survey came out and it's just like, hold on. Anyway, I hope the Dons Trust take that on board and run with it. I think will make a massive difference. And that's a national organisation. We should become like the best Hurricane 2 club in the country because that's, you know, and they got that set up. It just seems a little bit odd. That's where I'm at.
I think the one thing I was trying to get to, Mark, was actually trying to protect the DTB because obviously on social media, and I foolishly have rejoined the Facebook groups at the worst possible time. But it's that, you know, suddenly people get, you know, I can't believe we're concentrating more on getting women involved than getting results on the pitch. It's just like, I can't understand why people don't see that these are two completely different things. And it wasn't a club initiative. It wasn't a Dons Trust board initiative. It was someone else's initiative. And that's why, you know, when it from a selfish point of view, when it comes to promoting the play, whatever, I don't use those forums. I don't know where I can go to it, because as soon as you start mentioning something like that, people go, oh yeah, just what we need, a play. And it's like these things can't exist. If we're not winning games of football, you can't do anything else. And that is the problem that we have.
I totally agree with you, Matt. That's the short-termism that is really wrong, because the reality is you need to get new people into the ground. You need to make going to football a more attractive proposition. The reason why we're doing that is because that makes us have more money, more revenue, which actually attracts the better players, attracts the better managers, because we were scraping the barrel to get JJ, right? And we were actually, JJ was, I think, significantly better than, you know, whatever. So that's where we were at. And the only way we're going to improve that is to actually get more revenue and more appeal to a wider fan base than we have at the moment. And that means all these things and all that kind of nonsense that appears on some of the elements of social media need to be put part to one side, because people need to think of that bigger picture. You know, concentrating on the football, actually, if you're going to concentrate on the football, you concentrate on the revenue and the income that comes into that ground and the supporter base. That's what's called concentrating on football. That's what's going to deliver a more successful AFC Wimbledon than, like, let's throw money at things that we don't have. You know, that's just the road to ruin, as we've seen at so many other clubs. It doesn't work. You know, we need to be looking at how do we actually make ourselves more sustainable, get more. Anyway, I'm ranting again. I need to have a little flag on this podcast that says, Niall's ranting. This is why I need to have Alex here, so you can just go, stop ranting, Niall.
So I think I agree with Niall. I'm slightly flabbergasted that we're not a Her Game 2 club. I'm fully in support of Wowzer and any other group that wants to set up. It doesn't cost the club anything, but apart from a few shout outs during the match, it hopefully attracts new people in. It gets a more diverse fan base, and it means that we're more likely to maintain our season ticket and our fan base and our numbers next season. And that can only be good. You look at what's been announced in the news just now. Wigan have been docked 3 points for failing to pay their players again on time. That's the fourth time they've failed to this season. They're adrift at the foot of the championship. You know, they're pretty much gone already. We're not in that situation, but the biggest danger to us being relegated this season. You know, I've said I don't think we're going to get relegated based on form or based on where we are in the league at the moment. But if we were to be in a situation where we were failing to pay our players, failing to pay our suppliers, going into administration or anything like that, that's where we would as a club fall apart and we would get relegated and we would quite likely never be heard of again. So having that sound financial basis is the only way that we as a club are going to survive. And each of these initiatives, I think, does its small part to support that income stream. And if it makes some people feel good and feel more wanted at the club, that can only be an even better thing. So, yeah, more power to them. Brilliant. Well done. Let's see another one come along.
I think the big issue we always have, this is the one thing, and when people talk about investment and stuff like that, and obviously when you're on a bad run, it's the same thing that comes up again, is more investment. In actual fact, I think what people are saying is not actually more investment. What they're saying is selling the club. And I would like people to be honest about that, because there's a lot of, we're all going, we want more investment, and there is more investment. Opportunities available. The truth is, who wants to actually buy into it, or who would want to take over this club anyhow for good philanthropic reasons? And yes, we have been scarred, because all of us went through what happened in 2002, and I don't think anyone should belittle that, because that was a huge thing. And maybe football has moved in a different direction, but Niall obviously knows this through his Fair Game stuff. So many clubs are going to the wall and have been threatened, and there's a whole thing about administration of a load, and there's probably a lot of stuff under the scenes which we don't know about. So there's all this talk about, you know, if we sell the club, that is our salvation. I genuinely don't think it is. I think the uniqueness of being a fan-owned club could be our salvation. And our budget is no worse than, you know, we should be, I understand, mid to upper levels is where our budget is. In actual fact, it would probably be competitive towards the lower end of League One with some of the sides in there. So we've already got a budget that can compete.
I think that's where it goes back to whether JJ is the right person. And also to remember, we've had all these injuries. I think you make a massively valid point. Like, I mean, who's going to invest in us, right? You know, think again, you look at the kind of people who've invested in other clubs, and they're not the kind of people who actually want to be invested in clubs because they've walked away and left clubs in ruin all over the pyramid. You know, I mean, like, going to administration is quite a common thing now, you know, and the consequence of that, there will be a point where you'll start seeing clubs just imploding all over the place. I mean, there are so many clubs in crisis at the moment that are really on, like, you know, you've got Sheffield United, you've got, you've obviously got Wigan, you've got Southend, you've got, you know, the list is quite long at the moment. And we do a newsletter at Fair Game each week. And each week we've now got clubs in crisis bit. And each week we've got four or five little new updates on the latest club that's either going to administration, forgotten to pay their players. All of these are league clubs. You know, there is a whole bunch of clubs that are on the brink, and they are all privately owned. They're not fans-owned clubs. The fans-owned clubs are the ones that are doing all right financially. And yet we can, I'm still thinking there is room for new investment, but that room for new investment goes down to that 75% threshold, which I think is the key. And we've still got, there's gaps there. So if you talk about new investment, get people in, you know, the people who moan about that say, right, okay, find us somebody who's going to invest under that criteria. Otherwise, as Matt says, it's just you might just say, I'm actually anti-fan ownership and I want to have little to do with the running of my club. That's what you're going to say. If you're saying that, I want that honesty. Like Matt, I agree with that. That's what I'd want. You're going to say, yeah, I would have nothing to do with the running of my club.
Well, we do. And we're therefore trying to be positive. So, considering we're on a 10-game unbeaten run, unbeaten as in not winning. Unwinning.
A strange definition of unbeaten, but you know, yes, okay.
I know. I meant to say unwinning, but sort of unwinning exists as a real word.
It does.
I'm going to wrap it up there unless anyone has any other specific.
I'm going to say one thing, which is there are a few people, there's very few, but there are a few people going around at the moment talking about claiming, suggesting, or just asking questions, I'm doing air quotes with that, about the conduct of the Don's Trust board elections last year. Now, as people may know, may not know, I was the chair of the election steering group for 2 years. I wasn't involved in the elections this last time, but I know the team who were, and I have every respect for their professionalism and their abilities. All I would say is, if somebody wants to suggest that the election was not run fairly, that there was outside influence, that something was a bit hooky with it, you'd better come up with some pretty concrete evidence to back up your claims. I don't believe any such concrete evidence exists, by the way, but you'd better come up with some concrete evidence, because there are people who are doing a voluntary job, but doing it in an incredibly professional manner, who do it to the best of their abilities. And if you're saying that they're corrupt, which is what you're saying by making these suggestions, inferences, retweeting, reposting, even just asking questions, you'd better be on pretty strong ground. Otherwise, you are taking part in a defamation. It could end up being pretty expensive for you. So my plea to everybody is, you may not like the outcome of an election. You know, I'm a Liberal Democrat. I don't like the outcome of virtually any election. But, you know, you may not like the outcome of an election. That's absolutely fine. But if you want to suggest that it was in any way corrupt, you better have a decent evidence to support your claim. Otherwise, you're going to find yourself in court.
Do you know what? Alex, I would love to see the people in court about it, because some of the stuff they said is scandalous. And for me, it is, you know, you can't let people get away with some of that, because it's ruining the reputation. I mean, not only is it ruining the reputations, but the mental health and the stress and strains that go on to people like that when they have those accusations thrown at them, because some other people believe it, and that's the worst thing. So until actually that is taken into account, people are really properly, you know, almost taken to court on some of this stuff. I just think it's just knowing some of the people involved, knowing how some of the people who got affected, it's not just, these aren't just words. They really personally affect and damage people, and they damage the reputation, not just that individual of that club. And we need those sort of people just really, you know, held to account thoroughly. And actually, you know, without that, I think it's, I would fully back what action, really I would.
But Mark, is there a statement coming out from the DTB about this? Because I understand there was stuff put on pro boards and there's been some other things that have threads put on. I mean, it's been dismissed because it's just, it's untrue. But it would be helpful, I guess, if there was a statement that came out from the DTB about this.
I don't know if there's a specific statement coming out. I know the DTB have sent information out today relating to the SGM, forthcoming SGM, which I know is a different topic, but obviously is relevant. And that information has been sent out to members today. Obviously, there was a newsletter that went out recently. The DCB are all fans and they're all individuals and they're all at the game and all human beings, and none of us are oblivious to anything that's going on. So as and when things need to be said in the appropriate way, then they will be. And I think it's just easier to leave it that overall. So I will do that and I will wrap things up. Even though he's not here, we will do this obviously in Adam Varma anyway. So generally speaking, we have some numbers for the week and they're all very straightforward and they all relate to how particularly well we are all doing right now. So Matt's number is zero.
Is that the evidence that these people have against the DTB? Zero evidence? Is it the number of points that we picked up recently?
It's nothing even as simple as that.
Is it the player ratings for Gunter, for instance?
No, it's much more simple and much more recent than that.
Recent than Saturday?
No, Saturday. Relating directly to Saturday.
But the number of points
goals you scored.
Thank you, Alex. Target. Shots on target. That's all it was. Shots on target on Saturday, zero. Oof. Okay. Alex's number is 10.
Games without a win.
Correct. Bang on. First time, you see? You need to come on more often, my friend. Okay. And Niall's number is 7608.
Average attendance by AFC Wimbledon.
Correct. Look at that. You see, you guys are getting it. It's only taking you 30 episodes.
Can I point out that Matt
I get it. I often get it first time.
Anyway, well done.
Thank you, Mark.
Yes, I think that leaves us like fifth in the attendance table, if only we were fifth in the actual real league table. But there we go. Look, considering everything, I think, well done, everybody, for keeping it about as realistic and honest and open, but also polite as we possibly can do. We are the same at Wombles. We are all, as we said before, unaffiliated and independent. And we're just guys who are Wimbledon fans who, like every other Wimbledon fan right now, is frustrated with the situation on the pitch and would like everybody to pull together, win some games, play some attractive football, score some goals, starting with Barrow on Saturday.
I'm not bothered about the attractive football bit.
Yes, indeed. In fact, it doesn't actually matter how attractive the football is as long as the scoreline is positive in our favour. So that's been episode 30. Thank you very much to Niall. Thank you very much to Alex. Thank you very much to Matt. Hope that Adam is having a fabulous time in San Francisco. You can find us at sameoldwombles.com. and obviously on Spotify. And we're out every Tuesday, Wednesday morning. We'll see you next week. Thank you and good night.